Welcome to the SB Live California podcast. Connor Morissette here with Lance Smith and Bodie Da Silva talking some high school football. We also want to hit on USC parting ways with Clay Helton and what that means for recruiting, as well as just breaking down that decision. So we'll start there. De La Salle losing up in Northern California for the first time to a Northern California opponent in 30 years is also something that we'll hit on today, and we'll do the usual takeaways from the games we were at last week and preview the games we will be at this upcoming week. So, Lance, how are you doing? How's everything going with you? And just want to start with you and check in. How are you?
Thank you. Well, I'm good, and I say the same thing every week right now, which is just football gets better by the week and more fun to be a fan of and to cover by the week. And can't complain about anything else.
Amazing. And Bodie, Torrey Pines had that great hook and ladder play. Thank you for sending that to me. That was very impressive. How are you?
Good. Yeah, I can't believe we're already in week five. So almost the halfway mark. Seems like it's gone so quick. And after the spring season, this was really about what we had. So at least we'll get double of that schedule in this year.
Certainly. Okay, so let's start with Clay Helton. I have a couple things I'd like to hit on, and then we can get into Dante Williams being the interim coach, about how he's such a great recruiter, and that'll probably end up helping them in the long run. So I just tweeted this a few minutes ago, and I think you saw it, Lance. I just keep thinking back to that Holiday Bowl in 2019 when USC was blown out. Blown out might be too strong, but lost by a few scores to Iowa, and I just thought that would be the time Helton was let go instead of yesterday, which good for USC for doing it midseason. It seemed like it needed to happen, but I thought it should have been done a long time ago, and I just want to talk about why for a little bit. So first, he's an offensive coach with an offensive background, and it was pretty clear that they were having some issues on offense. So then what do? They bring in Graham Harrell from North Texas to be the offensive coordinator, and that was prior to the 2020 season. And if you're an offensive coach, why wouldn't you just fire that coach if you even need to bring in an OC? That didn't make any sense to me. I liken it to when Sean McVay started coaching the Rams. What did he do? He brought in Wade Phillips to coach the defense because Sean McVay is a great offensive coach. Would Sean McVay ever hire a big-time offensive coordinator to undermine him a little bit and change what the offense does? No, because that's his job. So that didn't make any sense to me. He's also helped not a very good recruiter. Remember that 2020 class? They were 64th nationally, 12th in the Pac-12, which for USC is just not good. So then what do? They hire a recruiting coordinator, and well, he's the cornerback coach now, interim head coach Dante Williams, to help with recruiting, and then they skyrocket in 2021. So USC did a lot to help what was around Clay Helton when it was so obvious, though, that Helton was the problem, and now they're seeing that. They have a better offense on paper, and they have recruited better, and what's going on the field, it's still not good enough. So I didn't understand why Mike Bone and the USC administration thought Helton wasn't the problem, it's the support around him, when it was so clearly both. And I think now you have all this support staff help. What happens when a new coach comes in? Are all these guys going to have to be bought out and let go because the new coach doesn't want them? I think that's what's going to most likely end up happening. Maybe Dante Williams stays on the staff, but I'd be shocked if Graham Harrell and Todd Orlando, the DC, are going to stick around with whoever the next coach is. So that didn't make any sense to me. I wanted to start with that. And if Lance or Bodie, you have any response to that, I'd love to hear it. If not, we can talk about Dante Williams. Lance, I know you wanted to hit on him a little bit, but those were my thoughts after yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, I like how you broke it down, and you hit everything on the head, as usual. I can definitely say, as a USC fan, as soon as Helton was fired, or, you know, USC fan, USC alum, as soon as Helton was fired, I got texts from people celebrating who I hadn't heard from since, I think, around when the pandemic started. Oh, no, we have some lawn mowing outside my house. But anyway, so here's the thing with Helton. I mean, you hit it on the head that he's an offensive guy. They brought an offensive guy to help him. That doesn't make sense. 2019 was perfect. It was when the recruiting class was even though the kids they got in that 2020 recruiting class were good kids, it was still in terms of rankings and in terms of sheer volume, it was not okay. Like you said, the recruiting started turning around as soon as, and I mean the month, Dante Williams comes in. I'm a little surprised that he's the head coach, just because he's so in his element, both with defensive backs and as a recruiter, a guy who's always out on the trail, a guy who is making putting the time in for those in-person relationships that head coaches like to have, and they have to the extent that they can, but they just don't have the time to always be out on the recruiting trail, the level of a nationally renowned guy like Dante Williams. For that reason, I'm a little surprised they made him the head coach. Also because he's only been there for, I think, not even two calendar years. And then if he doesn't work out as a head coach, that means not only do we lose him as a coach, we lose him as a recruiter. And that there's, you can't overstate how valuable that is. All that said, I love the move. I love the fact that they picked someone who's going to satisfy the fan base a little bit, because anyone who knows anything about Williams knows just what he's doing as a recruiter and as a leader, kind of a good vibes generator. So I'm with it, and it's a little bit precarious to make him the head coach, but I'm optimistic.
I think it's all about.
Oh, and I.
Or go ahead, Lance.
I'm so sorry. I had one more detail that I was saving for this conversation. So the 2019, I talked to two kids, very highly recruited. Both of them four-star kids who USC was targeting hard, both on the offensive side of the ball, both SoCal natives. And one of them said he grew up wanting to go to USC since he was a little kid. Neither of them went there. One of them said it was because of Helton, but both of them said the biggest reason wasn't even Helton. It was USC's refusal to go in a certain direction. Like, they could live with being recruited by Helton, going to USC and Helton being fired within a year, something like that. But it was the combination of the underwhelming success under Helton and their mistrust of the administration that had them choose against their hometown school and to schools that have not only less football tradition, but are just less academic and less, you know, less atmospheric than USC. So that was something I heard straight from the source multiple times on some of the biggest kids they whiffed on.
Interesting. Yeah, I think the administration definitely didn't help. And it's tough to know exactly who makes the decisions. Obviously, it looks like Mike Bone makes them, but how much is Carol Folt involved? How much is the Board of Trustees involved? Who needs to sign off to pay the big buyout, now sign a new coach who financially can back that? Because remember, USC has that, what, $1 billion sexual assault settlement. So that's obviously very expensive. So I'm sure someone in the background needed to say, yeah, go do this, and we'll help you pay for the new coach and help with the buyout. So I'm sure that had something to do with it as well. But without knowing all of the facts, I do think that Holiday Bowl after that loss was the time to make that switch. Bodie, have you been following this at all? Do you have any thoughts?
Yeah. I'll add on to that. I mean, ever since Pete Carroll had turned the program back around, a USC offer has meant so much for so many San Diego kids. And I think Reggie Bush, I think, was probably the start of that. I mean, his years there, he was the star, not just in college, but I mean, across all sports landscapes, I mean, and what he meant. So it just seems in recent years, kids from San Diego that have still gotten USC offers and a few that have still gone there, it's not what the offer used to mean. It really, in my opinion, Oregon has turned into that in terms of West Coast kids and what their coveted scholarship offer has meant. And in Southern California, I mean, I know there's obviously so many schools competing throughout the state, but it seems wrong that it's turned so different where that's no longer the case. And even looking nationally, I mean, we talked about it a little bit, but to see Alabama and Clemson and Georgia and Ohio State all starting quarterbacks from Southern California, and even you can include Oklahoma with Spencer Rattler from Arizona, and just still a guy that Arizona should have guys come into Southern California as well, for all those quarterbacks to have chosen, and obviously JT Daniels was there originally, but for all them to have decided, my best shot at exposure, at winning, at getting to the next level is to leave not just the school, but the state, the conference, to play elsewhere. It's just such a big indictment on USC and really the Pac-12 as a whole. So I'm hopeful that whoever this next hire is can bring USC back. And hopefully Oregon is still competitive, because for the Pac-12 to get back to where it's at, you're going to need more than just one school to look like a championship team come the end of the season.
Yeah, looking at that Oregon win against Ohio State, it was, I think his name is C.J. Verdell, right, Bodie? He's from Modern Day Catholic down in San Diego. He had a huge game at running back. Micah Pittman returns punts for Oregon. He's also a good receiver. He's a Calabasas kid. Mikael Wright played up at Valencia in the Antelope Valley area. He's had a huge year for Oregon, will probably be an NFL draft pick. And he was a guy who went to Oregon. And two of the biggest recruits of all time, Justin Flo and Kayvon Thibodeau from LA, they didn't even play in that game. So it could have been a lot worse for California people watching that game, or USC fans, I should say.
Well, and even in future years, I knowing what Oregon's recruiting class is in these next couple of years, obviously they have three of San Diego's best players committed and are even working on future classes. And I'm sure for LA, without names off the top of my head, of having guys committed there. So it's something that I know UCLA is on the rise. They look like they're getting better, but USC definitely needs to pick it up, because these kids leaving the state, really, it cannot happen. So
yeah, T-Mac for Servite. Yeah.
T-Mac, exactly.
Comes to mind. Great. Well, I think that's some great stuff. The last thing I wanted to say, or I guess two last things. Everyone's saying how nice of a guy Clay Helton is kind of annoyed me too. Like all the media people, oh, he's such a nice guy, such a nice guy. You know, that is great. It's important to be nice, but in the world of football, it's about wins and losses, and it will always be about wins and losses. So when you're not getting it done in that department, you can be Santa Claus, but it doesn't matter. And then what does it mean for high school recruiting? We came out and saw Damani Jackson from Mater Dei say he was still solid at USC. And I think Dante Williams being the interim head coach will be good for recruiting. But even if he wasn't, I think a lot of USC committed kids were committed in spite of health, and they thought that he might be let go and it could come at any time, but they were going for the tradition, for, you know, Dante Williams was playing a big part of it. I think a lot of people, it wasn't Clay Helton that they were committing to, it was the school, which is another reason he should have been gone a long time ago, because the head coach has to be a bigger player in the world of recruiting. It has to be why kids want to go there, which, again, he wasn't. And we'll end with this. Years ago, this story always gets told in L.A. high school football circles, but when Kayvon Thibodeau was on Dorsey before he went to Oaks Christian, Clay Helton was at a Dorsey game against Hawkins, and Jim Harbaugh was there for Michigan, and it was night and day. Everyone was going up to Harbaugh, and he was, you know, being the man of the people, and Helton, a few people were talking to him, but it was just night and day. Everyone wanted a picture with Jim Harbaugh. Everyone wanted to be seen with Jim Harbaugh, and Clay Helton was kind of in the background. That's not the kind of guy USC needs. They need a big personality as well. So I wanted to finish there. Lance, let's talk about De La Salle a little bit. I know you've done some preview posts about them. And what was your opinion? I think you kind of were on the train that they might lose this Northern California streak this year. I don't think anyone thought it would come against St. Francis Mountain View. But I remember you saying earlier on in podcast, this might be the year that it ends, because maybe they weren't as strong as they've been in years past.
Yep, and that's what it is. And when we were talking about that, we were talking about how I like Folsom's chances relative to other teams' chances. You brought up that Folsom has been this loaded before, so if they're going to lose to Folsom, it means that they've taken a step back. And I wasn't quite ready to say it until they actually lost. But in terms of top end talent, they have. I mean, they used to be. I mean, it's De La Salle. It speaks for itself, where they used to be with not necessarily 4- and 5-star kids, but the amount of legit Division I prospects just coming through. So that's pretty much it to me. I've had coaches tell me that they are as well coached under Alamba as they were under the previous coach, whose name I can never pronounce right. And I've had coaches tell me that they are that he is better than numerous NFL coaches right now, and just the general De La Salle program and their year-round stuff. I will say this, 318 games outside of the two ties, going back to 1991, Connor, I know you and I were not alive yet at that point. Bodie, I don't know if you were alive. I don't think you were, but I could be wrong. So this is the first time they've lost to a NorCal team in our lifetime, and that includes most of the Central section too. What I love, when I was looking through, you know, it was trending, it had like 2,200 tweets or at least something like that when it happened. I loved how people were talking about it because it's a big deal. And we'll get into the playoff ramifications in a sec. But no one was trashing De La Salle the way that some other very, very, very high level California teams, if something like that happened to them, something historic that they lost, they would be getting trashed. And I think the reason for that is because De La Salle is so gracious, not just in defeat, but success. I've talked to Coach Alamba and a couple of their players numerous times about the streak. Not only do they not care that much about the streak, they don't even talk about the streak. I think De La Salle cares less about this loss from the perspective of the streak than anyone else in any high school football fan. Now, do they care about the fact that they are not where they need to be to accomplish their goals? 100,000%. I'm sure they are alarmed about that. And that's not a knock on St. Francis. There have been people saying before the season started, this is St. Francis' year. They're going to upset everyone and win the Central Coast section. I mean, their depth, their size, and at some of the skill positions, they are in a powerhouse that really went under the radar. But I think the fact that for all the talk about the streak being over, no one is really ribbing De La Salle just goes to show like what kind of program that is in terms of what they stand for, regardless of how much they are whooping everyone by it. So that was just kind of cool to see, and having heard it straight from the horse's mouth, I thought I would add that. But that's just a testament to De La Salle. Now, that said, this means it's time for the playoff system to change. I don't know how many years now that De La Salle has gone straight to the CIF Open Division State Championship game directly after winning the North Coast section. They have 28 or 29 straight North Coast section wins. And after, I think, maybe 20 of them, something in that range, was when they started going, just saying, De La Salle, it's you versus whoever wins the Southern section. That's not going to work anymore, because St. Francis, even if they don't necessarily win the Central Coast section, you can't make the case that other teams don't have the right. Whoever wins at the top divisions of Central and Central Coast and North Coast, or well, not North Coast, Sac Joaquin, that you can't really make the case anymore that they don't have the right to play for an open division appearance if they want to. I mean, I think if Folsom comes out and they beat them, and if De La Salle doesn't play multiple scores better than they did against Mountain View, or St. Francis Mountain View, they will lose to Folsom. So I think if that happens, the CIF is going to have some serious decisions to make that probably need to start this year, like not to start for next year, but to start for this year, if any other teams belong in the NorCal seed of Open Division State Finals.
Don't you think, Lance, if Folsom goes undefeated, though, they'd just slide right in and they would probably deserve the bye?
Absolutely. Absolutely. But if St. Francis ends up winning, then, I mean, maybe it's time to bring back the semifinal, the regional Open Division bowl game.
I think part of it, too, is so Mater Dei, St. John Bosco, or maybe Servite this year would knock out a really good Northern California opponent too from a state championship game. Because imagine if those teams had to play like a Folsom or something in a state bowl game to get to a state championship. I think the reason that rule is in place, yes, it has a lot to do with De La Salle, but I also think it is in place to try to keep some really good teams still playing or to give them a better chance in a state bowl game. Because let's face it, the winner of the Division I in this tournament in the Southern section, if they played a state bowl game and it wasn't against De La Salle or Folsom, because it wouldn't be, because they'd be on the other side of the bracket, that wouldn't be very pretty, I don't think.
Right. That's what I'm saying. So that's why they're probably going to need to bring back the bowl game for NorCal teams exclusively.
Got it.
Yeah, because as far as bringing the Southern section winner in, it works perfectly.
Wouldn't you argue, though, with competitive equity, and that's their big buzzword, that wouldn't work if one team gets a bye and another doesn't? I think if you have to do it for one, you'd have to do it for the other.
Ooh, that's a good point. I mean, I don't know where it became written in stone that De La Salle, if they win, they get that straight pass. Like,
it's a 30-year streak. It's unwritten, but, you know, it's if you're that good.
Right. Well, I think how that's codified might have something to do with it. But you're right. Competitive equity standpoint, that would probably benefit them and not Bosco or Mater Dei or potentially Servite, whoever. So that's a good point. I don't know if for me personally that's compelling enough to not change it, assuming De La Salle is really taking this slight step back. But you're right. That makes total sense.
Bodie, do you give Cathedral Catholic a chance this week? Because it seems like the bear has definitely been poked, so their De La Salle is going to be angry. I know Cathedral Catholic had a tough time with Corona Centennial. Just thoughts on that game. Because I think if Cathedral Catholic wins, then that looks obviously really bad for De La Salle, and then that would just jump Corona Centennial way up the rankings, although they can't really get much higher. They're already at number four.
Yeah. It's a game that I think preseason Cathedral, there was no guarantee they came in undefeated, but I think De La Salle we thought would be. So it's taken a little bit of luster off that game, but it's still a huge game for both of them long term. And I think that Centennial game may have lit a fire under Cathedral, knowing that, hey, we are really good, but we have to bring it every week because we decided to challenge ourselves with a schedule like this. So in the two games since then, they've scored 102 points against Chaminade and Helix, who Helix won't be an open division team down here, but they're always a really good team. And I would expect them to be able to make a Division I run. So only allowing 17 points in the last 2 weeks, and obviously that was all against Chaminade. I think Cathedral's kind of woke up to who they are and playing back at full strength. So I'm not going to say I expect them to win, but I think they have a really good shot to win. Obviously going on the road and traveling more than just one section away is a big deal, but I think they'll definitely be prepared. And we'll see. Maybe they're catching De La Salle at the wrong time, coming right off a loss, but that should be a good one on Friday night.
Do you know, are they driving or flying?
I would expect them to fly, but I haven't confirmed that. Whenever they've gone up to Sacramento for the bowl games, they've flown, but I can't confirm that either way.
Got it. Yeah, we'll see. I think if I had to make a prediction just about what's going to happen in Northern California, I think Folsom would be the team to come out of the upper echelon, you know, whatever you want to call it, be the best team in Northern California and take on whoever wins down here. But they have a really hard schedule, so we'll see. De La Salle also plays St. Francis Academy from Baltimore, Maryland, and they're a national team. They're not in our Power 25. They were earlier, but they lost to St. Thomas Aquinas in Florida, so they aren't in anymore, but they're still a national program. So De La Salle, this could be the first of a couple losses for them, so we'll see. Let's transition now to where we were at this past weekend and just discuss some of the games we're at. I'll start. I was at Warren against Sarah, and injuries really messed this game up. I was really excited to see Malik Murphy, the Texas commit, go head-to-head with Nico Iamalieva, the junior 2023 quarterback, who is uncommitted, who both are top guys in their classes, and then Murphy got hurt very early in the second quarter. What was interesting was I watched back the play that he came out after, and it was a long throw and he didn't take a hit, and it was a chest injury he had, and the coach said that nothing is broken or nothing is torn, it just soreness. So I don't think he hurt himself throwing the ball, because that sounds crazy, but the play that led to him leaving, or the play before he left, he just threw it. He didn't take a hit. So I wonder, maybe earlier he took a hit. I didn't get great clarification on when exactly he got hurt. And to me, just being on their sideline and watching it all go down, it seemed to me more of like a precaution than something was really, really wrong. And that, I don't know that for a 100% fact, but I think the fact that nothing was broken and that nothing was torn backs that up a little bit. I feel like if that was a playoff game, maybe he could have kept going. But again, I don't know that 100%. It was just very interesting. He threw a long pass and then left and took off his pads and never came back in. So hopefully he will be back. And I know Sarah has Mission League champion aspirations. So if he can play in all the Mission League games, those start on October 1st, that'll be great. But it was too bad that really took away from a great quarterback battle. Nico looked great. He threw two touchdowns, 368 passing yards. His receivers didn't have as great of a night. They dropped a lot of passes. And Kevin Pearson, the Warren head coach, was really frustrated. He told me, and I think if we were not in a professional setting, he would have swore a little bit. He was really upset with the drop passes. He was like, how do you expect to run a spread offense if you're going to drop all these balls? So that really upset him. So my takeaway was Warren is good, but we knew that. And then I just think it's Nico and then a pretty big drop compared to who their next top player would be. So I think Warren is going to make the Division II playoffs in the Southern section. I don't see them losing another game unless that Downey rivalry game goes a little crazy, but I don't envision that happening. So I think they'll finish the year undefeated. That'll put them in Division II, and then I think they'll go as far as Nico will take them, which isn't exactly a hot take. I think we already thought that about that team, but just that kind of confirmed it after watching that game. And then defensively, Sarah shut out Warren in the second half, so that was really impressive. I think the drop passes had a little bit to do with it, but I also wanted to give Sarah a lot of credit because they were down some starters and they still really played well. And that defense, again, Sarah, I feel like always gets hurt. So if they can stay healthy, they'll be pretty good. And I was impressed with the defense.
Yeah, those two things I was going to say. I mean, I remember from your coverage, five defensive starters were missing. And it was kind of funny, although not in a funny way, that one of them happened to be their second string quarterback. Yeah. So when he was out. But and then, of course, third string got injured. I will say, or I was going to ask you, actually, since 2018, has there been another team that's in California that's routinely ranked in the top couple hundred in the country that 2018, 2019, this season, absolutely devastated by injuries before league play even starts as much as Sarah? Because I cannot name one that even comes to mind half as much.
Yeah, I agree, Lance. And I don't know if it's like the training regimen. You never want to say that because then it makes the coach look bad. But they do have a lot of injuries, and it's kind of historically been happening. Because remember when they had Malik Murphy, Justin Martin, and Doug Brumfield, who's now at UNLV, all three of those guys got in during, I think that was either 1 or 2 years. Yeah, 2 years ago. All three of those guys got into the game, which... You have one Division I quarterback, you're probably not going to take him out, and then injuries have affected that. So that was crazy. But I agree. They have the injury bug every year, it seems like, and you feel bad because they don't have very good depth, and they need those starting guys. But, yeah, I don't really know what else to say because it is disappointing. You want every team to be at full health, and maybe you'll have an injury here or there, but it seems like Sarah routinely has a lot of guys out, which is too bad.
Just bad luck.
I agree. Lance, so you were at St. John Bosco, and they were up 35-0 on East St. Louis, but then the third quarter got a little wonky, and Pierce Clarkson needed to throw that bomb to Logan Boer to really see the game out. That was, I think that might be the best throw I've seen this year. That was an incredible throw, just watching that tape this week. I think, and I haven't seen Bosco in person yet, but I know you feel this way, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but it just seems to me week in and week out, Pierce Clarkson is kind of outplaying Caden Hauser a little bit, and so I wonder what it'll take for Jason Negro and the Bosco staff to go with Clarkson. I think if they're 4-0, I believe, and the scoreboard I think would be 3-1 in favor of Clarkson. I think Hauser had a better game against Alamany, but I'm just every week it seems like Clarkson's having a great week, and Bosco 35-0, they look great, and then all of a sudden East came back into the game. I don't think they look as good as modern day. I'm just busting out a lot of takes here. You were at the game. What do you think?
Yeah, and I agree with all your takes so far. I mean, I will say this. I'm a little biased towards Clarkson if I'm going to pick one, in the sense that just for whatever reason, the games I'm at, or the game, a couple times the games I've watched streams, every single one is Clarkson's game.
And the opposite happened for me in the spring, but then in the modern day game, I thought Clarkson was a little better. So I was under the impression that it was Hauser's to lose. And then I think we just see him on different nights and we have differing opinions, but now I think it's becoming a little clearer.
Right. And then if, you know, I go to two Bosco games and then I miss two, the next two I don't go to, Hauser performs a little better. So in that sense, I have not confirmation biased. I can't find the word I'm looking for. But yep, I did talk to Pierce after the game. He said that being able to bounce things off of Caden, that they have a great relationship, and that they defenses do go to different looks, so that they get to see each other playing looks that they don't get, and give each other input that they just wouldn't get from anyone else. So I do think that's valuable. But I mean, we always talk about it. How much rhythm can you be in? And when they took their foot off the gas pedal, Coach Negro called it a meltdown. It was really strange because at first it looked like they weren't trying anymore. Then it looked like they were still trying, but they just couldn't do it anymore, even though nothing tactically had changed. It was one of the more perplexing things I've seen. And I was like, okay, once it's two scores and the other team has the ball, they're going to clamp them down. No, not at all. It was perplexing, but I will say the first 2.5 quarters was the best I have seen them play since the 2019 playoffs. Like all of last season, all of this season, those first 2.5 quarters were the most impressed that I've been by Bosco. So I will give them that. And, you know, Coach said after the game that some of it's just the human element. Like these kids, sometimes they just need to be teenagers. They're tired, et cetera, et cetera. And that's part of it. And they held on enough to get the win. But it was a tale of two different takeaways, one of how good they can be, and two, how danger it is to let your foot off the pedal halfway through the third quarter.
Yeah, I had conflicting thoughts. First, I was like, they're up 35-0, job well done. They put some backups in, and then East getting back into the game. Yeah, you don't want to see it, but at least the Bosco coaches will have something to ride their players on this week. Be like, hey, look, we can't do that. So maybe it was a coachable moment. And then on the flip side, I thought, well, if they play Modern Day and they switch off for a quarter, they're screwed. So you can't do that. So I don't know how much of a takeaway to have from that. We'll just see as the year goes on. But those were kind of my two thoughts after that. So we'll see what happens.
Yep.
Bodie, let's go to or Lance. Do you have one other thing to add?
Oh, I was just going to say another huge game for Jairus Satele. I mean, right now, from on a statewide perspective, he is really high on my list of Defensive Player of the Year guys. I mean, he is their whole D line is as good as it gets. But man, there are times, quarters at a time, where he looks like a one man wrecking crew. It's really out there.
Yeah, and the reason he's not a Power Five guy isn't big enough, so to speak. But he's dominating. Cool. So we'll see if that might change as the year goes on. Bodie, let's go to you. What game were you at over the weekend, and what did you learn?
Yeah, I was at a really good non-league game. Torrey Pines, who I had number 8 coming in against number 9 Poway. Two teams that have been in league for such a long time, but since they separated in league, haven't played in 5 years. So Torrey Pines, who I expect to be a contender in Division One, maybe one of the top contenders as they move along. They really handled Poway. They stopped Poway 3-and-out on the first series, then scored another 3-and-out, scored again, and they lost their shutout. They fumbled there with a couple minutes left, so it ended up being 26-6. But I think the biggest takeaway from that was in week one, we saw Torrey Pines lose to Cathedral by 2 touchdowns and turn them over 5 times. And we didn't know, maybe that's Cathedral not playing well, but I think that just went to show that Torrey Pines is a contender, maybe not in the open division with it only being 4 teams down here, but I think maybe one of the top in Division One, and they'll get their chance in league play. They got Oceanside this week, but as they go along, they'll get their shot at Carlsbad and Mission Hills and El Camino. So if they are one of the contenders, they'll definitely have the chance to show it as these next couple weeks go along.
I agree. And they played Cathedral Catholic close in that first game. So that I remember thinking, oh, okay, maybe that says a little bit more about Torrey Pines. So I agree with you. I think they are playing like a Division One team, or a Division One contending team, I should say.
Yeah.
So I'm right there with you. So in terms of games this week, in the Southern section, we got some big ones. San Clemente at Edison. I think Edison will win. I'm not sure about San Clemente's offense. They've struggled. Their defense looks great, but I think Edison's offense will lead him to a win. I'm going to be at Mission Viejo against Alamein. I'll talk about that in a second. Murrieta Valley against Norco. I like Norco in a great battle of two good offenses. And then Servite Sierra Canyon. I think Servite, both teams are coming off the bye. But I just think Servite and then Modern Day and Bosco are just a step above everyone else. So I think Servite will win. So Mission Viejo, Alamein. I think the winner of this game will have a great chance of being that 7 or 8 seed in Division One. So you hate to think like this, but it might be better if one of these for the losing team in the long run, if you have championship aspirations. But I'm picking Alamein in this game. I think the defenses for both teams are very good and kind of cancel each other out. And I like the skill position guys on Alamein a little bit more than I do with the Mission Viejo guys. It's also at Alamein. Alamein's 1-2 now. They beat Oak Christian last week to get their first win. But they've really challenged themselves in these non-league games, playing Lone Peak and then St. John Bosco. And not that Mission Viejo hasn't. They've had a tough schedule too. But I just like Alamein a little bit more. One thing I'm interested to see is who's going to be playing quarterback for Alamein. Dylan Jebbia played really well last week against Oaks Christian, accounted for 5 touchdowns, but Anthony Wolter, a sophomore, has come in when Jebby has struggled at times. So what does Alamein do if Mission Viejo's defense upsets what the Warriors want to do in the pass game? I'm excited to see that. And then the Alamein running game, I think, is really elite. I know, again, Mission Viejo had a great day on the ground against Long Beach Poly, but Jalen Thompson and Floyd Chalk are really good for Alamein. So I'm picking the Warriors. I think they win like 27-20 would be my prediction. We got about 4 minutes left here, so Lance, I know you have a huge game, Los Alamitos against Santa Margarita. Thoughts there?
Well, I haven't seen Los Al yet, so I'm excited, one, just from a fan perspective to see that passing game. But I don't know what to expect from them other than the players I know. And of course, that starts with Malachi Nelson and Mikhail Lemon. Santa Margarita, I knew that team very well last year. They had an extremely, they had a special senior class. And with most of those guys gone, I don't know exactly what to expect. I know Hiro Kanu is having an even better season in terms of tackles for loss and that type of stuff. Even with the departures in their front seven, I still expect them to be good on both lines. And Jackson Potter, the three-star QB, who's kind of come on strong in the calendar year 2021. Of course, the transfer from Jay Serra. He's off to a great start, too. I think he's throwing for about 250 yards a game, or a little more, actually. I think 275, 10 touchdown passes, one interception. He's been awesome. And they have a nice supporting cast of guys around him that I'm still yet to see. But that would be Nicholas Lopez, Nick Gallegos, Jalen Jones, et cetera, et cetera. So, and Foy, the running back. So I'm excited to see those guys. When Santa Margarita was at Battle of the Beach at Edison, a passing tournament, they won it all. So I don't know the individuals in their secondary very well, but I'm excited to see them. So I like Los Al in this. But I think not only does SM have a chance, but I think it's almost a toss-up with Los Al having the favoriteness. I just made up a word there. So that's pretty much what I have there, and I'm pumped about it.
I have Los Al 31, Santa Margarita 28. Bodie, let's finish with you here. Where are you going to be?
Yeah, I will be Carlsbad at Mission Hills. I have it number 2 against number 4 Mission Hills. I saw Mission Hills a couple weeks ago against Lincoln. They didn't look all that great, but I think more of that is just that Lincoln's really good overall, and they're a balanced team that really has playmakers on every spot. So Mission Hills did bounce back last week, their league opener. They took down La Costa Canyon 41-0, and that surprised me. I know La Costa hasn't been great on offense, but when they played Tesoro, they held them to 13 points. They held San Clemente to 13 points. So for Mission Hills to get 41 shows me maybe some things have changed for them and they've been able to flip it around. They've got really experienced quarterback in Gunnar Hensley. So him and Matt Martin, that's a great tandem here for quarterback and wide receiver. And then Carlsbad, they got a challenge last week against El Camino. They were trailing at one point, but then turned it around, ended up winning 28-14. And we know all about their quarterback, Julian Sayin, one of the best sophomores in the state. So preseason, I thought this would probably decide the Avocado League. I'm not sure that's certainly the case at this point. There's some others that have looked good, but it looks like these are the top two, and Mission Hills will get to host. So Carlsbad will definitely get a real challenge, and looking forward to that one.
Great. Thanks, guys. Thought this was a great show. Thank you, Lance. Thank you, Bodie. This has been the SB Live California Podcast. Tune in next week. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you then.